Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Fortune. You're listening to Mushing Radio here on KRF 9.5 in the Mattoo Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site, and you can find all of our episodes over on iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio, as well as on social media. And calling in today is the co-host of Mushing Radio. His name is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. I'm happy, as always, to be talking Iditarod with you.
Likewise, for sure. You know, we're getting closer and closer to winter up here in Alaska. We're in the rainy season, and hopefully we have snow in the next couple of months. I'm looking forward to getting back out there on the trails. What do you think?
I mean, we've heard sort of mixed forecasts about how snowy it's going to be this winter. I am, as always, hoping there will be a lot of snow. I know it already snowed a little bit in the mountains and up north. So hopefully we'll get a lot more of that in the next few months.
Boy, I hope so. Today we're going to talk about the 1990s of Iditarod. We've covered the first two decades of the race. We talked about the early days in the 1970s and then of the woman in the 80s. We're going to continue with that in the 1990s. And I think folks that are Iditarod followers will note of names that are coming up here real shortly, because it really becomes a who's who of mushing, really starting in the 1990s. And even fans that are relatively short will know a lot of these folks' names as we begin to talk to them. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And the 90s in the Iditarod world were kind of a decade of dynasties. There's a very small group of people who have won the Iditarod four times, and there's an even smaller group of one person who's won the Iditarod five times. In the decade of the 1990s, everyone who won the race everyone who won the race would go on to win the race four or more times. So
wow.
In the first 17 years of the race, we had a lot of people who ran it a few times, and a lot of people who won who had only one victory in Iditarod. But in the 90s, it is all the names that longtime Iditarod fans will know, such as Susan Butcher, Rick Swenson, Martin Boozer, Jeff King, Doug Swingley. So these are really the very top dominant teams in Iditarod history.
And we talked last time about the Susan Butcher dynasty, and she had won three times there in the middle to the late 80s, and she also took the crown in 1990 to start this decade off for her fourth win. And before we move on from Susan Butcher, Alex, I'd like to tell a little story about how she passed away, because I know that she is still a real big inspiration, especially for women mushers up here in. Alex, are you there?
I am here. Sorry about that.
Hey, that's okay. We'll edit this out. So let's go ahead and get started again. We were talking about Susan Butcher, and I want to make sure that we mention a little bit before we move on about how she passed away. I know she's a big-time role model for a lot of the women mushers out there, especially the young girl mushers that are coming up. They really have that light in their eyes when they talk about Susan Butcher. So she won in 1990. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And almost, did not quite, but almost broke the 11-day barrier in 1990.
So they're moving down in time. I know it's going to be a couple of years here yet before we get below the 10-day mark, but we are moving a little bit faster in terms of days. What are we, more than halfway, almost halfway from what they wanted in the early years, which was 10 days, 20 days, and 49 minutes. So they're really cruising down the trail, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of that is that the equipment continues to get better as the years go on. Part of it is that the trail breakers, the people who go out on snow machines to make sure that the trail is smooth, are doing a better job. But also a large part of it is that as people have been running the race for many years and have been developing and working with their dogs, the dogs are also getting better. And before, you know, we talked about in the first race, no one was actually sure if it was possible for a dog team to even go 1,000 miles. So as people are getting more and more adept at this, the dogs are getting better and the times are just getting a lot faster.
Right. And let's mention just real quick about Susan Butcher's legacy. And I want to mention something here that is kind of talked about a lot in Musher's circles. And I know that Susan had passed away from cancer, and we all know about Lance Mackey's fighting of cancer and overcoming that in the later years and in the early 2000s. And it is often talked about, Alex, that a lot of times people are blaming the heat that we use in our cookers for all of these cases of cancer in mushing. Have you ever heard that story at all?
I have not heard that theory.
Yes,
it's
because it is. And what we use is a product that you use to thaw out ice in your gas tanks up here in Alaska. And the theory is, since we stand on top of our cookers or stand above our cookers so often and breathe in all these fumes, that it becomes a carcinogen. And that is causing cancer in a lot of mushers. I always thought that that was a very unique theory, and I didn't know if you had heard it when you had spoken to all of the folks that you had spoken to, but it is awfully prevalent in this sport in terms of a disease or an illness. And I hope that someday down the line we can kick it in all forms, not just with folks in mushing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know enough scientifically to be able to evaluate that or say anything intelligent about it. But I, you know, there do seem to be a lot of people who are in the mushing community who have had cancer or who have died of cancer. I know that Didi Genro is also a cancer survivor. And every year it seems that there are maybe a dozen people running Iditarod who are cancer survivors. So I don't know if you mentioned this before, but Didi also had, when Susan Butcher was undergoing treatment, Didi helped take care of and train her dogs. And then when Susan came back and ran Iditarod again after undergoing treatment, it was largely because Didi had kept up the training on all of Susan's dogs.
I did not know that story. That's very interesting. And I'm sure, you know, in this community, we all stick together, and a lot of times others will step up to help other people. I know that was very prevalent this past summer in the fires up in the Willow area, which is still kind of an ongoing struggle. But for folks in the mushing community, they're always helping each other out. So let's move on, Alex, if we can, to 1991. We've heard this name over the last couple of decades, Rick Swenson.
Yeah, Rick Swenson had a really great race in 1991. And if you look at the top five in 1991, it's all very, very well-known names. Rick Swenson was first, and then Martin Boozer, Susan Butcher, Tim Osmar, Joe Runyon. So, you know, any of those five people could have won this race, but Rick Swenson just pulled it out in 12 days, 16 hours, and 34 minutes. And within six, all of the top five were within about 6 hours. And that's a very close range for the top five.
And this was Rick's fifth win. He is still the record holder, being the only musher to have won five Iditarods. And so it has been quite a while since he's won another one. What is that, 14 years now, 24 years now, since he has won a race. But he's still a contender. He's still out there almost every year running the race, isn't he?
Yeah. I think he missed last year, but he has been, he's one of those mushers who, when he has a team, he is always someone that you've got to look out for.
So in 1992, we hear Martin Boozer for the first time as an Iditarod champion. You had mentioned in 91 that he was close on the heels of Rick, and I know we had talked about him in the previous years about how he was up and coming as a musher. So he got his first one in 1992. Who else was right there with him, Alex?
Yeah, in 92, again, we have all of these very well-known top names. This was the first year that the winner finished in under 11 days. So Martin was at 10 days, 19 hours, and 17 minutes and some change. And then right behind him was Susan Butcher, Tim Osmar, Rick Swenson, Didi Genro, Jeff King, Vern Halter. So we have a really, you know, the top 10 is just filled with names that most fans of mushing and Iditarod would know.
So
also 1990.
Oh, go ahead.
1992, I believe, was the first year that the winner, in addition to getting the prize money, was awarded a truck. It's been a big tradition for the winner of the Iditarod for quite a long time to get a truck, and I believe this year the value of the truck is in the neighborhood of $40,000, and you know, considering that the cash value of winning the Iditarod all through the 90s was just about $50,000, that's a pretty significant amount to get a $40,000 truck on top of that.
I totally agree with that. And you had mentioned the first time under that, just over that 10-day mark, 10 days, 19 hours, which is almost exactly half time from that first race in 1973, where it was 20 days and 20 hours, I believe. 20 days, 0 hours, 49 minutes. So just about over half there. So that really shows how fast these guys are going down the trail, even at this point. So in 1993, Alex, we have Jeff King. Is that correct?
Yes, and this was Jeff's first win. He also has won the Iditarod four times, nearly won it a fifth time a couple of years ago, but then was forced to scratch right around safety. So Jeff King is a very interesting musher. When I first started getting into the Iditarod and becoming really interested in the Iditarod was right at the time when Jeff King and Lance Mackey were having their sort of epic battles, their epic duels. Jeff King is a musher who is thought of as really an innovator. He is the guy who developed the sit-down sled so that you don't have to be standing up on the runners all the time, which now I believe almost everybody uses some variation of that. So this is a very interesting race and a sign that, as always happens, that a new generation is coming up. Also in this year, you know, again, the top 10 includes Didi Genro, who was only about a half hour behind Jeff, Rick Mackey, Susan Butcher, Tim Osmar, Martin Boozer, Doug Swingley, Rick Swenson. So again, very, very well-known names in 93 in the top 10.
Alex, I'm going to put you here on the spot a little bit. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. But both Jeff and Martin, do you happen to know how old these guys are here in the early 90s? I know we could probably do a quick math test here, but I'm trying to figure out, are these guys sort of the older bunch that are starting to win the Iditarod, or are they, you know, like we're always looking at now, those up-and-coming youngsters that are going to be the future Iditarod champions? And we're thinking about Dallas Seavey and Lance Mackey when he was still pretty young when he started winning. Do you know how old these guys were when they started winning?
Not sure exactly, but I believe they are in their early 30s.
Okay, so they're definitely older than Lance and Dallas, the last two younger mushers, I guess it would be, when they really started winning. Is that right?
Yeah. Dallas is an interesting case because he is definitely on the younger side and yet so incredibly dominant, much more dominant than right now than anybody else.
Another question to put you here on the spot. I know Dallas is coming up in the next couple of shows. We're going to start talking about him and the CV dynasty, but what do you think? Is he going to break that five record that Swenson holds right now? I think it's possible.
I think it's definitely possible. I don't know if he'll do it in the next couple of years, but considering that he has three, and that's three in 4 years, and he's still a very, very young guy, you know, conceivably Dallas could be running this race for the next 30 or 35 years. I would imagine that he would get more than five.
So in 1994, here we start hopscotching on winners here. We have Martin winning again. I'm sure that Jeff is not too far behind. Where is he at in the standings?
Let's see. In 94, Martin was in first, and Jeff came in third. So Martin was about 10 days, 13 hours, and Jeff was 10 days, 21 hours. So about 18 hours behind Rick Mackey in between the two of them. And then again, as was the case for most of the 90s, in the top 10, we've got Rick Swenson, Doug Swingley, Tim Osmar, Didi Genro, and Susan Butcher. So once again, just a real battle of dynasties in Iditarod 94.
You know, you'd mentioned Tim Osmar in the last few years, and he's one of those guys that probably most people don't know his name. I know we've talked about Dean Osmar a couple of times, and we always talk about Didi never winning this race either, but it sounds like Tim, he's really up few years, really making that push, but he never got there first. What do you know about him, if anything?
You know, I don't know a lot about him. I know that he's Dean Osmar's son and was just a really solid, very, very competitive top 10 racer for a long time, and I believe he's good friends with your pal Hugh Neff, and I'm
right.
Sure Hugh has a lot of stories about him. I don't know much beyond that.
All right, so we're going to continue on to 1995. We hear this name for the first time. He's also a four-time winner coming up really in the late 90s and in the early 2000s, Doug Swingley. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Alex, he is the first musher to win Iditarod that came up from the lower 48 and won it that year. Most of these other guys in the last 25-odd years or so had all been up in Alaska for a period of time before they, during the time that they won the race. But this is the guy that came up specifically to run Iditarod and won. Do you know that story?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. He's from Montana, so, you know, obviously in a northern state, but still in the lower 48. And I had heard, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard from a number of people that he was, when he was winning a lot of Iditarods, he was under a great deal of pressure that people wanted him to move to Alaska, and he stubbornly decided that he just preferred being down in Montana and perhaps liked the idea that he was coming from outside to come and win Iditarod. This
and
also,
still,
in 95,
oh, go ahead.
He was the first winner to break the 10-day mark. So, and he almost broke the 9-day mark. So Doug Swingley in 95 finished in 9 days, 2 hours, and 42 minutes, which is very, very fast and well below half the time of the first Iditarod in 73.
So, like I said, we will talk a lot about Doug in the coming years, but in 96 we hear a very familiar name. We hear the King's name again, Jeff King winning it again. What do you know about 1996?
Yeah, 96 was not quite as fast as 95, but almost. And this was a battle between Jeff King and Doug Swingley. Jeff ended up winning by about 3 hours. But again, if you look at the top 10 in 96, we have Jeff King, Doug Swingley, Martin Boozer, Tim Osmar, Didi Genro, Vern Halter. So a lot of familiar names there as well. You know, I wanted to mention one thing, which I should have mentioned earlier when we were chronologically there. But there was, in the early 90s, a great deal of controversy about dog care. And specifically, there were a couple of groups that were objecting to the fact that there were dog deaths during most Iditarods. And partially as a result of this, several Iditarod mushers got together and formed a group called Mush with Pride to standardize and set out what the best practices were for dog care. And long-time listeners and long-time Iditarod fans know that this is the idea that there's a small group of people who try to every year spread the word, which I consider misinformation, that dogs, Iditarod dogs, are mistreated. And I don't know exactly how dogs were treated, you know, in the 1970s. I assume that they might not have been treated as well as they are now, just because we know a lot more about what about how to treat dogs and how to motivate dogs and what is healthy and what is not healthy. But starting in the early 90s, when Mush with Pride was formed, there was a consistent set of rules that mushers were required to follow that would, you know, set out exactly what the parameters are for how dogs should be treated in order to ensure that they can be great athletes and also healthy and happy.
You know, Alex, those principles and procedures are still followed today. We just recently had our biannual kennel inspection up here in the Matsu Valley, where they come out to make sure everything's proper. And at at our kennel, we refer to the Mush With Pride guidelines in making sure that everything met that requirement so that we could pass that kennel inspection. So it is still followed today here some 20-odd years later. But if I could ask, Alex, if we can spend just a minute or so on this dog care topic, because it is a topic that comes up all the time, not only in Iditarod, but every musher that has a Facebook page, we get that comment at least once a week about our dog care and how we care for our dog. We're going to continue on here. Alex, the first time you were ever in a mushing kennel as a relative new person to Iditarod, what were your first impressions when you saw how these dogs were taken care of? Can you think back and remember what you saw and what you thought?
Well, you know, there's a number of things. The first thing is all of the dogs I have seen at kennels, and this goes for big kennels, small kennels, every type of kennels, you know, competitive mushers, recreational mushers, all of the dogs I've ever seen are just very, very happy. They are there to do a job. They're there to run, but they're generally very, very happy and well cared for and well loved dogs. I was very happy to see that the mushers that I know who have kennels, they know all of the dogs. You can walk through the dog lot and they will tell you details and stories about each one of the dogs and know the dogs by name and by temperament and by, you know, how they act. So that's the first thing. Some people point to the idea that dogs are, that a lot of times in dog yards, the dogs will be kept on chains that are connected to their dog boxes. And people seem to have the idea that this is somehow cruel. And yet, the chains are, it's not like a three-foot leash. It's generally a fairly large chain that lets them have a good deal of space to run around in. I've also, most dog lots I've seen are enclosed so that dogs can be taken off leash and allowed to just run around the dog yard. And then even during the off season, dogs are frequently taken out of the dog lot so that they can go and run and train. And the sheer joy and exuberance that a sled dog has when the snow hook is pulled and they get to run forward is just one of the most primal and joyful things I have ever experienced.
Well, thank you very much for that, Alex. I appreciate you sharing that, you know, because as a musher, we all have our opinions and our observations, but it's always good to hear from somebody that came at it from a fan's view versus somebody that's heavily involved with the sport. So we're going to carry on. I know we're already out of time here. Let's move on to 96. We hear, or actually at 97, Alex, I lost count a little bit.
Yeah. So 96 was Jeff King again, and 97 is Martin Boozer again. And in 97, again, we're under 10 days for the winning team. But the top 10 includes Martin Boozer, who won. Doug Swingley came in second, about 3 hours behind. And then Jeff King, Didi Genro, Vern Halter, Tim Osmar was 10th. So, again, we have those big well-known Iditarod dynasties battling it out.
Right. So in 98, here we go again, back and forth, back and forth. Jeff King wins again. What is this? His third time, it looks like, in about 5 years. So three times in 5 years. We had talked about Dallas had won three times in the last four. So we really have Martin and Jeff really jumping back and forth with each other, and I'm sure that Doug Swingley's not too far behind. Is that right?
Right. Doug Swingley is in the top 10 again. In 98, it's Jeff King, and then about 3 hours behind him, Didi Genro, another second-place finish for her. Charlie Boulding, Mitch Seavey came in fourth. John Baker, who would win the race, I believe, in 2011. Ramey Smith, Martin Boozer, Linwood Fielder, Doug Swingley was ninth, and Vern Halter in 10th. So, again, it's, you know, starting to have a few more of the perhaps lesser-known teams, but again, in 98, we've got Jeff King, Didi Genro, Martin, and Doug Swingley all in the top 10.
You know, Alex, I'm not much of a better at horse races, but I would tend to bet that there wasn't a whole lot of payout on the dollar on these three names in the 90s, were there?
No, not so much. yeah.
So to finish out the decade of the 90s, we again hear a very, very familiar name, Doug Swingley, winning for the second time at this point. He is doing very well in the next coming years. But what do you know about 1999 to finish out that decade before we move into the mysterious 2000s?
So 1999 was the, to that point, the biggest prize money payoff for the winner, $60,000 for Doug Swingley. And again, the top 10 included Martin Boozer, Vern Halter, came in third, which I believe was his best finish, Rick Swenson, Jeff King was seventh, John Baker was eighth, Mitch Seavey was 11th. So once again, we have these really dynastic teams who have been so dominant all through the 90s. And in 99, it was a battle between Doug Swingley and Martin Boozer.
So coming up in the next decade of the new millennium, we hear a very familiar name towards the end of the decade with some guy named Lance. And then we have our first European winner in 2003 with Robert Sorley. So I think in this next decade, it's all about speed, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all about speed, and at least in the early part of the decade, there was a real dominance of the original Team Norway. And so we'll be covering all of that next time.
Looking forward to it. So we will be back on in 2 weeks from today, same time, 4 o'clock Alaska time, and that will be, I guess, 8 o'clock Eastern time. So for folks that stay up late to listen to us, I want to thank you guys. We hear comments all the time over on our Facebook page, and people just meet me on the street and say, hey, you're Robert. I listen to Mushing Radio all the time. So I don't know how they know the face to the voice, but somehow or another, people find me and tell me that they listen to this show all the time. So, Alex, it's always a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Robert. And once again, we love hearing from everybody on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter. So please, if you have any comments or questions, hit us up, as the kids say.
There you go. So on behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.